man, freak out.
You're listening to the Brenton On Tour podcast.
That's right.
He travels the world running concerts and searches for the best coffee, people, and amazing stories so you don't have to.
Pay attention, you're going to learn something for a change.
This is a show about all of those things and much, much more.
You're blowing my mind right now. I hope someone's recording this.
So settle in. Pour a cup of amazing coffee.
He's a coffee snob, by the way.
Crank that ghetto blaster and enjoy the 150,000 ranked podcast in the land.
Ah, fake laugh. Hiding real pain.
I think that's an exaggeration.
It's the Brenton On Tour podcast.
Any questions?
Here's BD.
This, for the people watching at home, is a coffee. One of my favorite things I've discovered around the world, obviously, as you guys know. We've dabbled with many coffee episodes in the past. Of course, I had the Journey for Java, had a bunch of this whole show started with coffee. I get a ton of requests to keep coming back to coffee. So when I want to do that and when I want to come back to coffee, I like to talk about the business in general, what's happening in the coffee business and sort of how it's going around the world. And one of my greatest discoveries around the world, as you know, and if you've paid attention to this show, is in Oslo, Norway, with this guy, Tim Wendelboe. He's got one of the best cafes in the world. It's an AeroPress cafe. It's fantastic. He's just a wonderful human being, and I like to have him on once a year to kind of check in on the coffee business, see what's going on, and see if there's anything new that he can let out of the bag, but also give us a little bit of a breakdown as to what's happening in the world of coffee and Java and all the rest of it. So without further ado, welcoming back to the show, my old friend Tim Wendelboe. How are you, sir?
Hello, hello. I'm very well. How are you?
Well, I like this today. You are in the actual, you're in your lab there, it looks like. For people watching at home, I'm going to expand this, but Tim's got an amazing lab where I tried cupping for the first time, and he's got a whole bunch of different gadgets. What do you got back there? It looks like you got grinders back there. I see your coffee beans back there.
Yeah, I got a couple of fancy coffee machines. There's like on this side, that's a machine, US made machine called Beacon, that vacuum extracts coffee and tea and stuff. And then I got a pretty, which side is it? This side. The espresso machine there is a decent espresso machine, which is an amazing machine where you can look at pressure profiles and stuff like that. And then probably 5, 6, 7 grinders behind me. Everything for testing, you know.
When I talk about coffee, people are like, how can you have a coffee podcast? And you have one, and I'm not sure if you're still doing it. Are you still doing a coffee podcast, or is it?
Yeah, we actually made episode 20 yesterday, so it's still running.
It's people talk about, how can you spend so much time talking about coffee? And it's amazing to me because, as we mentioned last year, you had the most downloaded episode of all time. With my show, that was only trumped by, I hate to use that word, but it was only trumped by another, by a musician that had come on. And, I still get some super solid business from your appearance, but people are super interested about coffee. I've had Jeremy Gersey on, who I've asked you some questions to and does the cloud roasting and all the rest of it. People are actually fascinated with coffee. And they don't know that they are. They don't know that they are, because people, they go to Starbucks, and here in Canada, they go to Tim Hortons, and they just kind of do their thing. But when you introduce people to this coffee and what you do around the world and how you're so involved in setting the market and all the rest of it, I get people asking me, when are you going to have Tim back on? I didn't know that about setting the market and all the rest of it. So it's always great to see you, and I'm glad you made the time. And I always like to get an update, especially out of what we've just gone through as to what's happening. So let's start first and foremost. How is Tim Wendelboe? How is Oslo, Norway? What's going on?
I'm doing great. And I think in the context of what's happening around the world, Norwegians and Oslo is, you know, very well off. We have a huge oil fund that helps us through hard times, and Although we see a lot of inflation and interest rates going up and stuff like that, people still drink a lot of coffee, and especially during winter when it's cold and dark all the time, because now it's dark outside and gets dark quite early. It was almost freezing below zero this morning. So that means a lot of people drink more coffee. So for myself and my business, we're doing great. We have been growing a lot through the pandemic, and I've been able to actually stay home for a while and kind of structure the business, and done a lot of kind of back-end work that you don't really see, but that really benefits both the quality and everyone who works with us and our customers as well, of course.
You've got a subscription service so people can you know, get it sent to them all around the world. I've had coffee sent to me all around the world.
Yeah.
From you. I had some friends of mine that sent me some for my birthday last year. Surprised me with some coffee from you, and that was great. And that was a nice surprise. Yeah. You're still offering that service to ship around the world?
Yeah, I mean, actually, lately there has been some changes in like customs rules and stuff. So Europe is a little bit difficult to send to. We can still do it, but it's a little bit more expensive. The United States, no problem. We have a lot of subscribers there. It's actually the biggest market outside of Norway for us. And we also ship to like China, Japan, Australia. So there are, of course, some limitations because of customs clearance in some countries, but most countries it's okay.
How much of that of your business does that make up as far as a subscription service? Because your store is small, and I love it, and it's small, but you're not putting 500 people in there. I mean, it's a patient process because, you know, doing an AeroPress takes, you know, what 2 minutes, right? 2 minutes and a bit. Yeah. So, you know, some people, North American, as we've discussed, are impatient when they want to drive through. They just want to do the thing, get their coffee and leave, get in their car and drive. But in your particular case, you're on a corner. You're on a corner that doesn't have a lot of parking. People have to walk up to you and wait,
Actually, this summer it's been, Norway opened up again after the pandemic. So we had a lot of tourists, and one of our kind of biggest group of tourists are Americans, actually. And they love to be in our store for a long time and chat with us and drink a lot of coffee. So, but to answer your question, our web sales, which is the majority of that is our subscription, is about 1/4 of our total sales in terms of volume. But in terms of like money, it's about 30% of our business, I think, now. And it used to be, a fraction of our business before the pandemic. So that's the part that has grown a lot during the pandemic. And of course, our wholesale went down a lot. Like, wholesale meaning selling to restaurants and cafes because everyone was closed. So, when we send 1,000 kilos of coffee once a month to our subscribers, that takes a lot more work than if we did the same sale to, 10 restaurants.
1,000 kilos of coffee.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what we do once a month. We roast Monday, Tuesday. And then we pack everything Tuesday, Wednesday. So the first week of the month, and that's only for our subscription. And then we continue roasting the rest of the week for all our other clients.
And clarify for me, you roast on the Monday, Tuesday, you ship on the Wednesday. When should people drink that bag of coffee by?
Well, I normally would drink it maybe after a week or even a little bit longer. Fresh coffee has a lot of CO2 gas inside the beans. So when you try to extract the coffee when it's too fresh, the CO2 kind of wants to leave the beans and the water cannot enter properly. So that gives you a little bit sourness. So it's kind of like if you need glasses and you don't have your glasses on and you try to drink the coffee fresh, it's like you might perceive the flavors, but it's a little unclear. But if you wait another week after roasting, like a week to 9 days, it's like putting your glasses on and you can see everything clearly and the flavors are there and it's sweet and nice. So normally it peaks around 2 weeks after roast, I would say.
I'm going to show a little video here of that process at your store, because it's I was trying to here. It's being a little bit silly, but I'll get to that. But the process of the AeroPress process, and a lot of people aren't familiar with what it is. And every single person that I've introduced to the AeroPress is just like, this is the greatest thing I've ever found, because it's like $30 to $40. And it just makes this incredible coffee that you can make on the go. And it's just an unbelievable process.
So, yeah, I love it too. Yeah. And there's rumors they will release some premium AeroPresses next year in different
premium. Material. What's defined as a premium AeroPress?
Instead of plastic, you might find a different material. That's all I can say.
Okay. There you go.
And might also release a bigger version, because they released a smaller version, but everyone wants a bigger version because they want to make coffee for more people. So I know that's in... I'm not sure if I'm able to say that, but I didn't sign anything. So there you go.
I'm actually trying to get one of those for the smaller ones for travel right now, because I'm leaving again and I'm going to be like an hour away from your farm.
Oh,
I'm going to be in Colombia and I'm just going to miss you, because I think you're going there, and we'll get into the farm and all the rest of it. So, my first question to you, and I want to kind of get some of the rumor stuff out of the way, because there is this tidy rumor going around the world is running out of Arabica bean. And I'm curious first, if you can break down, like, you know, there's many different beans, but Arabica, I think by trade, is the most popular bean, or at least the one that's used the most in most coffees. And I've heard rumblings and read a bit that it is running extremely low around the world, and I'm curious what that means for the general public, but also I know you do your own, you grow your own, but can you dive into a little bit about what that means for the world?
This is a big topic, but just to make things simple, there are around 130 different species of coffee discovered in the world, and one species is Arabica, and there are thousands of different Arabica varieties or cultivars. So that's the kind of most popular one to grow. The other one you might have heard of is Robusta or Canephora. That's a different species. But the flavor of those coffees are not as good for now. But the trees are more robust and less susceptible to disease and stuff like that. So that's why I think now it's like 60 or 70% of the total production in the world is Arabica coffees. But there are many different cultivars, and some are more susceptible to diseases and fungus attacks than others. The problem is that we have global warming, whether you believe it or not. Things are getting hotter and different around the world. So you see a lot of these fungal attacks on the coffee trees that makes them lose their leaves. And when they lose their leaves, they cannot produce cherries, and the beans are inside the cherries. So you have problems with that, and that greatly reduces the production. So this has been a problem for many, many years. And there are different research stations around the world developing new cultivars with the crossbreeding and stuff like that, and developing more resistant cultivars. But it turns out that after a while, they normally get susceptible to fungal attacks, because the fungus mutates, just like the coronavirus. It changes. So this is one strategy that's going on, and there's a lot more money and effort going into those kind of breeding programs at the moment. And they're also researching other species, if we can grow. There are, for instance, one called Stenophylla, one called Racemosa, and some of them are drought resistant, some are more resistant to fungal disease and stuff like that. So we might discover new species that taste great. Maybe not the same as Arabica, but different, but in a good way. Maybe we'll grow that in the future. So we don't have to fear anything. Like, you probably read that by 2080, all coffee will be extinct, but that's not the case. We're specifically talking about wild coffee in that case, in that report, wild coffees of Ethiopia. But you know that Arabica coffee grows in high elevations, in top of mountains, and the global warming is heating the world. So that means we have less and less mountain tops to grow on, because you have to grow coffee higher and higher to get the cool climate. But it means also that you might be able to grow coffee in different areas that you didn't use to grow coffee before, because coffee trees, they don't like frost. And that's why at the moment the commodity prices are very high, because there was a frost in Brazil a year ago, which meant all the production failed more or less in Brazil, which is the largest producer of coffee. But you do see coffee being grown in California now, which, you know, never was the case before because it was too cold. So yeah, the world is getting hotter, and the areas where that was suitable for growing Arabica coffee before and still today might not be suitable in the next 50 years. So you also see in Ethiopia that there's other areas that might be more potential in the future for growing coffee.
Do you see then it turning into a lab scenario? Coffee lab, where it's like, well, we'll just build a giant greenhouse, a massive greenhouse, and make that version. Like, the world's not going to run out of coffee, as you're saying, but I'm assuming though that pricing will change, or at least if it is, you know, as you said, that we're running out of mountains and the frost, yeah, and all these things are kind of hitting these things, it is drastically going to change the market, I would think. Like, what does that mean for the actual business itself?
I mean, I can only speculate, but I truly believe that the top quality coffees will still exist, but they will probably be more expensive. There's going to be more demand for it and less production. And producing coffee is quite expensive. And if you want to do it really well, like high quality, it's even more expensive. So that's like one thing that I think might happen. It's going to be more of a luxury, the best quality coffees, an affordable luxury, I have to say, because it's still quite cheap compared to, you know, other luxuries like wine and caviar and stuff like that. And then you might see the kind of commodity coffees that are cheaper and lower quality. The quality might go up there as well, but in a different way. They might grow more Robusta, which is the species that is very common in to grow in Vietnam and certain parts of Brazil. And
there's a substantial amount of people that I've learned, since I've studied coffee, or since I've dove into it, there's a substantial amount of people that just don't obviously care. They'll just grab coffee off the shelf and Tim Hortons, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts. We've dove into that before. People just want some kind of coffee. They add cream and sugar and they move on. But it's the people like myself that study down on it that go, you know, I'm willing to pay obviously $5 a cup at your place or $6 a cup at your place, because I know how you are involved in setting the pricing and how you're trying to sustain this market and also trying to take care of the farmer and trying to take care of his or her workers. So that's important to me as a coffee drinker. And I do drink Starbucks, and I do have one when I'm in certain areas, but I definitely try to support local. But there's more casual coffee drinkers than there are coffee snobs like myself.
Definitely.
So that's why, you know, I guess the coffee business itself will sustain, because people just, okay, well, I'll just switch to that coffee. But the coffee snob like myself gets worried that, you know, we're going to be paying $12 a cup soon, you know, when we try to search out the good stuff, you know.
Yeah, I don't think the prices will reach to that level, you know, in the near future, but, you know, in the distant future for sure. And I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because coffee is, I think, the second most consumed beverage after water.
Right.
You know, water is kind of water. You can have some water that is slightly better than others, but you kind of drink it because you're thirsty. And coffee, you drink because you enjoy it. And even though you might not think about it in every single situation, I feel that most people that I talk to about coffee are passionate about trying to find a better cup of coffee, whether it's like the lowest, cheapest one or the more expensive one. They always want something that's better. And people do understand that there are differences. Like, if you enjoy a Coca-Cola, it's more or less the same everywhere, except, you know, if you're really into the details of it.
Sure.
But
That's the same with whiskey. It's the same with wine. It's the same with, and I've touched on that with coffee. Like, you know, obviously I have my personal preferences and favorites and stuff, but part of the discovery for me is I try to find all the best coffee in the world, which led me to your shop because it was like, I'm trying, when I'm in these markets, it's easy to go down to Starbucks. Sure, it's easy to go to Dunkin' Donuts here in Canada. It's easy to go to Tim Hortons. It's sort of the national thing that you do. But, you know, I've got five incredible coffee shops in my little town right here. And they film some of the biggest movies in this little town from the world and TV shows right here. And those businesses are keeping these coffee shops alive because they're just going in. Because we're in a rural part of Vancouver or British Columbia, like any part of Canada. So easy to just go through the drive-through and get a coffee and leave. You really have to make an effort to go into these stores to support them, which is why I'm a massive supporter of what you do, but also discovering your place, you know, through European Coffee Trip and Google. It was amazing. And ever since I've discovered your world and how you do business, my whole coffee experience has completely changed how I go about doing it, which leads me in a good way, but it leads me to, you know, we discussed before about setting the market, where Starbucks, McDonald's, Tim Hortons, some of these big conglomerates are going to pay a certain price per pound. You're part of a group that sets sort of a bit of an indie price, or at least a market for you. So how do you go about setting the price for the market to take care of the farmer and the workers and also be able to sustain your business?
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
Wow. Well, I don't feel like I'm setting the price for the market, but I'm negotiating price directly with the producers that I buy from. And we, of course, have a middleman that kind of negotiates for both parties, which is normally the exporter. But to be honest, it's not really a negotiation. I normally offer a price, and the farmers are normally more than willing to accept that price. And that's because we are paying more than market price. And when I say market price, I don't mean market price for commodity coffee. I mean market price for quality coffee. They are two different things.
What's the definition between those two?
Oh, the C market price, which is the commodity coffee, it's set on the New York Exchange, and it's supply and demand, you know, stuff like that. Nobody talks to the farmers. So it's how traders.
How political is that? How political, like any other business, like whether it be the chicken business or the cigarette business or the gun business or whatever, I would imagine that commodity, there's got to be some politics involved in setting that price.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are a few huge players dealing with the green coffee in the world, and also with the roasted coffee, which like Nestlé would be one of them. Starbucks, we you know, not the biggest one, but a big player. Dove Egberts is a big one. So obviously there's, you know, stuff that is not necessarily about coffee when it comes to pricing. And, you know, it's coffee is sold by contract. And I think a coffee contract can be bought and sold like 10 or 11 times before the actual coffee was even produced, you know. So, and I'm not dealing with that market at all. I mean, we look at that market because at the moment the prices are pretty high, so we have to make sure that we're above that, but still we're paying higher prices. And for me, we now have a new kind of benchmark for quality coffee, which is called the Specialty Coffee Transaction Guide. And it's based on numbers that donors give to a group of students in Emory University. So they gather all these prices that people have paid for coffee and the amount of coffee, the quality, and so on. And then they make like statistics on what are the market price for if you're buying, let's say, 100 bags of this quality in Guatemala, for instance, and then you can get average prices. So at the moment, I think the kind of average price for quality coffee, which is kind of higher quality coffees, is about $3.50 per pound. And the C market has, you know, revolved around $1 to $1.50 for many years. At the moment, it's probably closer to $3. But those are two different products. You know, it's one is generic, one is traceable, specific coffee.
I find that fascinating because since the first time we spoke, I mean, those prices have gone up. Like gas has gone up, everything's gone up. But that C market always seemed very low to me. And the fact that it's gone to $3 is I mean, it's the farmer's still paying just as much for fuel and all the rest of it. So, it, you know, obviously everything's going to move along with it. But it is fascinating to me that it's gone up that much.
I can explain. I mean, it went up quite a lot during the last year because there was, as I said earlier, a frost in Brazil that kind of demolished probably, I don't know the exact number, but let's say 70% of the crop in Brazil. And what because the trees wilt because of the frost. And that means they're not able to produce for like 2 years. And that means there is no surplus of coffee in the world and the prices go up. The problem now is that even though the prices are high, like in Colombia, for instance, the exporters are desperate to buy coffee. So they'll pay really good prices for coffee that is not very good quality and not even dried, you know. So for the farmers, it's great. The problem is the fertilizer prices in Colombia has tripled in the last year. Labor cost has gone up, electricity, gasoline, food, everything has become a lot more expensive. And that's okay because the coffee prices are up, but when Brazil comes back to produce in full capacity again, the prices will most likely go down again because we've seen this cycle many times before. But the fertilizer price, the food price and everything will stay high. And that means the farmers are losing even more money. So that's why we need to get them out of this kind of loop of commodity production. And that's why I'm kind of dealing with the higher quality so we can work together with producers, elevate the quality, make it more consistent, make it more predictable, both for them and for me, so I can buy directly from them and negotiate prices directly based on what it actually costs to produce and what they need to make a profit.
This is your place in Colombia. There you are there. And I just can't believe I'm going to miss. I'm literally like, I've been dying to get to your place. Here's a little video from your place. Stand by, everybody. Pretty stoked to show you this. So check it out. So how do you pronounce it? Fianco El Suelo?
Finca, which means farm. El Suelo means the soil. So it's the soil farm.
Yeah, very, very cool. That's your place. And just
pretty old video.
It's an old video, but that sounds like you guys have to update and get a video. I could have filmed some stuff. I'm gonna be there on Tuesday.
It's embarrassing. I'm there like 4 times a year or even 5 times a year, and it's embarrassing. I haven't updated that site since I started it. So,
but you know what? It gives people an idea as to the flow. And anyone you know listening, you would have missed that. But anyone watching, you definitely see a bit of the process there. So you go 4 times a year to there. And what's that process for you from going there? Like when you go 4 times, is each trip different? Like this is the first one is to check the soil. The second one is to check this. The third one is to check this. Or is there, are all 4 visits the same?
It's pretty much the same actually. I also go because I buy coffee from Elias. I bought my piece of land from Elias, who is Finca Tamana. And I live at his farm because it's, you know, 2-minute walk to my farm and I don't have a house on my farm. So since I buy a lot of coffee from him, I also go there to, you know, work with him and also to sometimes cup coffees and select coffees and so on. So in that case, it's a little bit different from time to time, but for the work that I do on my farm, it's pretty much routine and, it's based around making compost mainly. So I normally stay 2 to 3 weeks. The first thing I do when I come down is to start making compost. I normally call Elias a couple of weeks before to ask him to gather material for the compost pile. And then you saw it in the video, actually. I was kind of putting some material into this net, and that's how we make compost. So we make thermal compost. I took a class with Dr. Elaine Hingham, who is, I think, one of the leading soil scientists in the world in soil biology. So we're trying to really make an inoculum in the compost based on growing microorganisms. So think of it as being like a sourdough starter that you put out in your farm to give life back into the soil and microorganisms back to the soil. And that's kind of what grows our plants. It's a microorganism who cycle the nutrients in the soil and make it available for the plants. So if you're lacking the microorganisms, the trees will die. And finally, you saw in the video, we were actually planting around 6,000 coffee trees. You saw we were working in the field there. And all of those trees disappeared.
So no, they died.
Yeah. And we planted them in 2015. And my land was, you know, basically just grazed by some cows and untouched. And the soil was in terrible condition. And I didn't really have enough knowledge when I started growing coffee. So we just dug a really, really small hole, like 10 centimeters, and put the tree in and some compost. And I've been putting a lot of compost around and everything, but they just wilted because the roots weren't able to grow and the soil was too compact and too dead. So I started in 2019 again. So this was in 2015 when I planted the first trees. And in 2019, I started planting trees with a new technique where we dug a huge hole, like a meter wide and 60 centimeters deep. Basically as far as you can go with a shovel. And then we put a lot of material in there and kind of composted the material in that big hole. And then after 2 months, we put the young tree in the hole. And then it grew like crazy. So I'm actually drinking right now coffee from those trees.
Amazing. I'm out of your products, so I have to get some more. But I haven't been home very much.
Yeah. No, but those trees produced after 2 years and are 3 meters tall now. And I have to actually cut them down again so they can grow up because they're getting too tall. But
I think it's a fascinating story that you've got one of the best coffees in the world. You've got one of the most amazing shops in the world. Yet you, like anybody else and everyone listening, please, and watching, is that, you know, I guess, you know, even you make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes in their journey to success. But I mean, that seems like a pretty big mistake, you know, like, and the fact that you've bounced back and the fact that they died, you've bounced back and you've done it. And you still came out of that with one of the best coffees in the world. I mean, 2018 is when I discovered your coffee. So if 2015 you planted them and you lost them in that process, I wouldn't know the difference because you've been able to just, you have such amazing beans and product there. So it's very interesting.
I have to say we haven't produced coffee until end of last year. And the first time we actually sold some of my own coffee was in, I think it was March this year, our website crashed. But we're going to sell some, I think, in December.
So most of that's from Elias.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a different farm. And But I mean, we're working very closely. So I've been helping him plant new varieties, helped him clean up the process and drying. And, you know, we work together very hard to improve the quality. And it's kind of step by step. But every year it gets just a little bit better, sure. Which is great.
A couple more for you. I want to know, how strong is the coffee business post-pandemic? Did people drink more coffee during the pandemic? Did it lead to more business? You've reopened, the world's kind of back to normal-ish, but how strong is the coffee business post-pandemic?
I've spoken to a lot of roasters over the last 2-3 years, and most of them say that they've had an increase in business. I think most roasters also see that the business has changed. Like we used to do a lot more wholesale, and that would be like the majority of our business. And today it's only 40% of our business because the web sales and subscription service grew a lot. And I think the pandemic made people realize that they could prepare delicious coffee at home. And it's much cheaper than going to a coffee shop. And there's a lot of geeks who like to geek out with coffee, and they realize, you know, they can get really high quality beans and prepare them sometimes better at home than in some coffee shops. I have a couple of customers who are really, really like on top of the range when it comes to brewing coffee. So I think, you know, the coffee industry has been strengthened during the pandemic, but I'm really curious to see now what's going to happen after Christmas, because we know inflation is really, really high and interest rates are going up. And like 20 years ago, it was very rare that I would go to a restaurant and eat dinner, you know, that I couldn't afford it. And not just because I was not earning a lot of money, but it was just expensive. And then it has become a lot cheaper in the recent years. And, you know, people in Oslo can go out and eat maybe 2 times a week if they want to. But I think that's going to change. And that means wholesale business is going to change as well a lot for coffee businesses. So it will be interesting to see how coffee is consumed in the next years, because I don't think it will be consumed less, because it's still a very affordable luxury. But I think the consumption will change. Like, where do you drink the coffee? Do you do it at home or in the office? Right. Or so yeah,
people like trends, they like to jump on things and do the whole home thing. You've got an incredible home roaster behind you. Well, in that, at least when I was in that lab called Roost, right? How you say it?
Roost. Yeah. Roost.
Roost. And it's an incredible like device that I would, you know, that I'm, you're talking about affordability. It's not quite there as a Canadian having to buy Canadian to euros, but if that thing drops about another $2,500, ooh, might be some home roasting. But there is some home roasting people can do, and I don't think people realize that they can actually do that at home. They just got to put the time in. I mean, people are growing weed at home, people are making their own wine. You can actually make your own coffee at home, and I think that people need to know that. Yeah. So
I mean, you can roast coffee at home, but it's going to take a long time before you're very happy. So, you know, don't expect to be happy with the first batch you do. You probably have to do like 30, 40 batches, and then you have to wait and then taste and then do again. And so it's for if you're really, really into it, great, you know. But it's kind of like espresso as well. If you're really into it, do it. But if you're just, you know, oh, it would be nice to have an espresso at home, don't do it. You know, drink espresso in a coffee shop and then brew filter coffee or V60 or AeroPress at home. That's much, much easier to succeed with.
And remember, one of the best roasters in the world kills his own plants. So it can happen to anybody. It can happen to anybody, but he's still got one of the best. It's going to take time, people. You're not going to get it in the first shot. Just like I've got a basic Breville upstairs, which is great for I've got the Barista Express, which is awesome, and it does a really good espresso for what I need at home. Double shot espresso, it's perfect. So I've been able to dial it in and get it to the spot where I was there, but it took me about probably 30 cups to get that. So it is an experiment, people. It is an experience to get it right, but once you get it right and you got it at home, it's incredible. So
I think, you know, people put a little bit too much effort into getting the top quality equipment. They should be putting the effort into getting the top quality coffee, because if you have really high quality coffee, it's quite easy to succeed even with a quite cheap grinder and an AeroPress. I mean, that's not a very expensive equipment.
Last one for you. What's next for Tim Wendelbo? What's 23 look like for you? The farm, the business, online, YouTube, all the things that you're talking about after we just discussed you updating all your websites. What's happening for you next?
Well, my farm is going to produce because I was there in August, and all the trees were with flowers, and there's a lot of young trees growing up now, so they will produce next year. So we'll see a little bit more coffee from there, and so I'm putting a lot more effort into the farm next year to make sure we can plant more and grow more coffee. Aside from that, the business I hope will sustain itself. We're looking towards a difficult year, I think. But I've had my wife working here for the last 2 years, and she's helped me restructure the company and done a lot of kind of internal work. So we are better prepared for the future. And, you know, we're trying to improve our customer service, the quality of our coffee, the way we roast, everything. So hopefully in that case, it will be a little bit better for us next year, I think. Personally, I'm a very passionate golfer, so I hope my handicap will go down to a single handicap.
Oh, man, I've been working on that all year. I'm all over the place. I'm a giant mess right now. You know what I mean? It's an absolute mess for me. But I've been trying to get that down, but maybe we'll get a round in when I get to Oslo. Yes. Not in the next 6 months or anything, because it's going to be minus 30. But it's awesome. Here's a little taste of what you can expect to find at Tim's store as far as this recipe. Looks pretty cool, and I'll get that up on the screen for us here. That, my friends, is a old, that's an AeroPress, and a lot of people don't know what it is, but that's the AeroPress, and how you make it in Tim's shop is everything that you could possibly want out of an AeroPress experience, and I love it so much. Listen, man, I'm so glad you made the time today. Thanks so much, Tim. All the best to you for 23. Hopefully we'll see you. Can't believe I'm going to miss you in Colombia.
Yeah, but next time.
TimWendelboe.no for the website. You can find him on YouTube and all the different places. Any advice for a brand new coffee drinker?
Don't be afraid of trying stuff you've never heard of, and keep an open mind. Yeah.
And you can get out of your car.
Yeah.
And go in and go in. Awesome. Do me a favor, stick around for a second, Tim. And thanks, everybody. Thanks, Tim, for joining me this week. And we'll catch up in 1 second here, my friend, as we move through. That, my friends, is another episode of the Brenton on Tour podcast. That is my good friend, Tim Wendelboe from Oslo, Norway, one of my favorite cities in the world. Tim touched on the idea about being able to not necessarily go out for dinner. Listen, that's the most expensive city in the world. So that's why. All right. It costs you 47, euros for a hamburger over there. So it's expensive. It's one of the most expensive in the world, but his coffee is extremely affordable. And I recommend that you get on the coffee service. This is Tim's third appearance on the show, and always a pleasure to have him on here to talk coffee. Hope you guys learned something today, a little bit about the business, because I like to teach that. We like to, have you drink better coffee, and also want you guys to have a different coffee experience. You know, it's a big part of my life when I travel around the world. Part of this new season, obviously, is sharing my experiences from around the world, people that I've met, whether it be online or in person or, in an experience. And one of my favorite places in the whole world to go when I'm on tour, and mandatory stop for me when I'm in Europe and close to Norway, is to hit Tim's. So Tim Wendelboe, one of the best roasters in the world, a hell of an experience. I'm going to put some videos up on YouTube of my experience there before the pandemic. So you can actually visit there now and go and enjoy some time. So that's the Brenton on Tour podcast for another week. I am back on a plane, back on tour, just around the corner from Tim's farm in Colombia to get going to end the year, but more episodes on the way. Find me online, brentonontour.com, and all the places you find your pods. And thanks for tuning in, watching, and all the rest of it. Drink better coffee, my friends, and we'll see you next week. That is the Brenton on Tour podcast. Talk soon. Thanks.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.